from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning, a country with no public cinemas will compete in the Oscars for the first time next year. Saudi Arabia will enter the film Wajda, the first full-length feature film shot there in its entirety. But even more extraordinary, in a country where women aren't allowed to drive and lack other basic rights, is that the film was directed by a woman. Haifa Al-Mansour, Saudi Arabia's first female film director, joins us to discuss the challenges of making Wajda, the story of a 10-year-old girl who wants to own a bicycle. Al-Mansour also directed the award-winning documentary Women Without Shadows, and we'll speak with her after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Saudi Arabia is a country without cinemas, as well as a place where women, denied of many fundamental rights, are still forbidden to laugh in public, which makes the fact that a woman filmmaker shot a film in its entirety in the kingdom, even though a good deal of the shooting had to be done in a van with a walkie-talkie, all the more unusual. Haifa Al-Mansour is Saudi Arabia's first female film director, and her most recent film, Wajda, is the first Oscar entry out of Saudi Arabia, a film which has been highly praised and has garnered enthusiastic reviews. The filmmaker, Haifa Al-Mansour, joins us in studio for this second Forum Hour. Haifa in Arabic means tall and slender. I mean, you're not tall.
I'm not tall, I'm sure. So that is, yeah. Parents should not even give names with physical attributes.
There's a good line. We talked about names yesterday. We had a whole hour about choosing baby names and all. Well, first of all, congratulations on being nominated for an Oscar. And the film, I'll say it publicly, was a gem of a film. I really found it very tender and sweet and moving. And I want to talk about it from a number of perspectives. But first of all, your main character, Wajda, who gave the name to the film, I've heard her described as feisty and spirited, and actually spunky is the translated word that comes about. But all that, a lot of moxie, a lot of pluckiness. This was not an easy role to cast, was it?
No, it wasn't easy. And thank you so much for having me today, Michael. It's amazing. It's such a pleasure to be here. And no, it wasn't easy to find a girl and to find a girl that fits. I wrote the part a lot on my niece, who's a hustler, has a great sense of humor, and always like trying to scheme to get money somewhere. So to find a girl who will have the same kind of spirit was we looked a lot. In Saudi, there's no casting agencies, and we had to rely on the word of mouth. So it was like fishing. Every day we will wait and see who comes and who knocks on our door. And then she came in, and she was wearing jeans and carefree spirit, and she sang for Justin Bieber.
Listening to Justin Bieber, right? Yeah. Wearing tennis shoes. And we should mention that the reason that she hustles some money, gets money for a number of different things, is she wants to buy a bicycle. It's that simple. So she can race her friend Abdullah and race him in a bike. And this becomes really in the heart of the film, getting that bicycle. Because bicycles were not allowed to be driven by girls were not allowed to ride bicycles in Saudi Arabia up until kind of recently, really, right?
Yes, in April, the law changed. And a woman can ride bicycles now, still with limitations in public space, and it's only in recreation areas and with male supervision. But I think changes like this are important to change the mindset, and we should celebrate those changes, even if they're small. And yeah. And for me, it wasn't the film. I know Saudi Arabia is a very difficult place for women to live. And for me, I didn't want to make a film about how bad Saudi Arabia is. And if people want to know that, they can go to any news channel. But it's not like bad, but I mean like how restrictive it is when it comes to women. But I wanted to make a film about how women can survive that. How can they change that? And how they, by just being true to themselves and pursue a dream and never give up. And I thought it is it's a message maybe will resonate better with younger girls in Saudi. Hopefully one day they will just have this kind of like confidence to challenge the situation.
You want your film to inspire young girls in Saudi
exactly,
Arabia.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think that's a noble aspiration. In many respects, though, The portrait that you give, and there are no real male villains or heavy-handed men, and I know that was important for you not to go to that kind of extreme or anything, but a lot of, well, the kind of system that women live under is also supported by the women. I mean, as we see, for example, the principal of the school, all
yeah,
of her
absolutely.
Rather harsh attitudes. The mother says, you can't ride a bicycle. You'll lose your virginity if you ride a bicycle. You'll be impure and all those kinds of strange notions that often seem to be in part of that culture.
Yeah, women are a product of the society itself, and they try sometimes to reinforce values that they think are correct and virtuous, and it keeps the society pure. And for me, I wasn't trying to make a film that where women are all victims and all innocent and all nice and men are bad and all oppressors. And for me, the situation is way more complex. And both men and women are trapped in a situation in a very conservative society, sometimes force them to take decisions that are not personal. And they know that it will not make them happy, but just to satisfy the pressure that's coming from the collective, because it's a very tribal kind of society. So
we're talking to Haifa Al-Mansour, and her film is called Wajda. It's the first film made by a woman out of Saudi Arabia. It's been nominated for an Oscar. And the film the film has just entered into the nomination process. I said nominated, not thank you for that, Dan for that correction. Well, okay. we're expressing it, you know, what I may have said as a Freudian slip of some way may actually come to pass. I think the film is worthy. In fact, the film reminded me of an Iranian film called Separation, though it's much more tender and upbeat, in that you're right kind of on the cusp here of a society and a culture going through the throes of real change. I mean, mm-hmm. major changes, really, potentially.
Absolutely. I was so honored to have Saudi Arabia, to be Saudi Arabia, my film that I wrote on the sofa of my home and imagined altogether to be Saudi Arabia ever entry to the Oscars. And it witnessed how Saudi Arabia is opening up for women and for arts. And it changes a lot. I cannot tell you how many tweets I get on like every day about the film and from young kids in Saudi how they are proud. And
you also get hate mail and you.
Oh
get,
yeah, I do get that, yeah. But I don't concentrate on that. I concentrate on people who are happy, and I feel like those young people want to feel ownership and sense of pride on the international stage, and having such things like a film, I think, will make them stay away from being militant and make them more tolerant and more accepting, and more they celebrate more steps like that.
The censors okayed this film, and yet there's a moment in the film, and it goes to the heart of what we're talking about here. There's a family tree, and all of the family tree leaves are men. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Waj's mother, one of the conflicts for her is whether or not she's going to buy a bike. The major conflict for her mother is her husband going to find another wife because he wants a male heir? Mm-hmm. And at one moment, she does something very subversive. She takes Waj's name and puts it on that tree, which is all men. And, you know, she is, in fact, Waj did that. Yeah, this is pretty subversive stuff, isn't it?
Saudi yeah, Arabia? It is about a girl who is trying to assert herself in the world of men. And she wants to have her name there. She wants to be heard. And she wants, and she does it not by, like, she took, like in the film, she takes a little clip from her hair and she puts it in that. And for me, it is sweet. It's about a girl who wants to be part of her father. And that is like, you know, it is, for me, even though I made this film, and whenever I see that, I feel like it is hard for girls in Saudi sometimes. And yeah.
But it got past the censors.
It got past the censors. It's like, yeah, there's more in the film. That is the easiest thing, that is past the censors.
Well, what were the hardest things to get past the censors? What was the hardest thing to get past the censors, do you think?
I don't know. It's like a lot of the whole premise of the girls trying to get to enroll in a Quranic recitation competition to buy a bicycle, and how that is like kind of like, I don't know. I wasn't. It is like, it explains how religion is in the society. So I was thinking maybe that would be more. But I think they respected that I was trying to work within the frame, within the culture, and I was trying to bring a film that is true and honest about without being offensive or, yeah.
Well, there is a Quran competition which involves some money, so Waja, not necessarily the most dutiful student, gets involved in this. And in fact, we've got a cut from that, which I'd like our listeners to hear.
ختم الله على قلوبهم وعلى سمعهم وعلى أبصارهم غشاوة ولهم عذاب عظيم ومن الناس من يقول آمنا بالله وباليوم الآخر وما هم بمؤمنين يخادعون الله.
Oh, the censors must have liked that. I mean, that was, there she's singing like a little nightingale, but, you know, it's mainly because she wants the money to get to win the contest. And she kind of gets a raw deal on that. I'm not trying to give away the plot here, rest assured. But there's a sense, in other words, that she should be studying the Quran and she should be reciting and singing of the Quran and all of this sort of thing is the warp and woof of the world she lives in, of Islam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, if I want to make a film in Saudi, I cannot like not deal with the religion as part of the film. And but for me, I wasn't trying to talk about how people are like their faith, if they are very faithful or if they are not. It just the heavy presence of religion in everyday life forces people to take sides, to position themselves sometimes in relation to religion, and that is for me is like an observation, and I just wanted to show a situation where people can understand that as much as, and I feel it is more interesting just to say that people are religious or not. It is how the religion is in everyday life.
Well, in fact, for a long time, Saudi women couldn't drive. Iqbal, the driver, and I think you had a driver when you were in Saudi Arabia.
I used to have a driver, and we used to fight like the mother.
The mother's fight, because he was late all the time?
Like, oh, he was late all the time, yeah. And I felt like I should have trained him more, and maybe I should have enrolled him in driving lessons and stuff like that. But I really wanted to just go to work, and I do, yeah. So.
But Wajda says at one point, you know, you have no manners to him. I mean, she kind of talks back. Again, there's that sort of sassiness that she has. Sweet little guy Abdullah says, I may be related to you. And she says, I'm too good looking to be related to you. I mean, she's showing a young girl with a lot of backbone and a lot of spirit and individuality. And I don't know that that's necessarily something that would be looked on with favor by the censors.
I think it is not. This is not what they're looking for. And I think I wrote the film very much like only by bringing situations that I found interesting and put in the heart of it as a child who has a character like what you described, and that allowed me to do a lot to say a lot about the society, and I wasn't trying to be judgmental as much as like just open a lens for people to peek into Saudi and feel how it is like to be a woman in Saudi Arabia without me really interfering and telling them, yes, that is good, that is bad, and stuff like that. It just like give them situations and have them like just feel it, yeah.
But you had, I alluded to this before, you had to film this in a van with a walkie-talkie because the idea of a woman out there directing actors or anybody telling people what to do is simply unacceptable.
It is gender segregated, the society, so I cannot be on the streets with the men. And yeah, but I screamed at everybody in the walkie-talkie, so I was heard. Like being in that limited space made me really. But for me, it was very important to respect the culture too. If that is how they want, I wanted to make a film. That is my ultimate goal. It's not like to clash with the public or anything. And Saudi is opening up, and there is. I hope that the film helps people to become more tolerant, and maybe some man somewhere will buy the DVD when it comes in Saudi for his daughter, and like give her something nice. And that's for me is more important than just like making a statement, just going in the street filming. It is not. I don't think that is. It's not my approach. So
you did drive a golf cart to your own wedding, though, didn't you?
Yes, I did. But it is like fun. That is my wedding, so I can do whatever.
Well, again, we're talking to filmmaker Haifa Al-Mansour, Saudi Arabia's first female film director, and her most recent film is Wajda, first Oscar entry out of Saudi Arabia, and a film which actually got a lot of the money for this film got bankrolled by a prince, as I understand it. This is a prince who's a little bit more enlightened than one associates with Talk about it.
Rutana Studios. Rutana Studios is owned by Prince Al Waleed, who's like an entrepreneur, and he's
isn't the guy that sued Forbes magazine because they said he had $14 billion.
I think so.
They have $20 billion.
Yes, I think so. But he's really supportive of women, and he gives them chances to make to have their voices heard in Saudi. And for me, like I tried to find funding a lot in the Middle East, and people did not believe in a film like that. They felt it's a happy girl on a bicycle. It's similar to Iranian films about everyday life. It is not like typical film that's coming from the Arab world, where if you want to portray women, you have to portray them like victims, and there is rape and sexual harassment and stuff like that. And I really felt like it's too much. I don't want to get into that again.
Well, you did one of those. You had a serial killer in a movie, right, who was hiding behind the wearing a...
But it was more a take on the veil than the other type. Like, yeah, it wasn't...
This is more influenced, I would say, by like 1940s Italian neorealism.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love The Bicycle Thief. And for me, also having a bicycle, because I come from a place that there is no cinema history, I wanted to rely on some kind of like heritage. And for me, the bicycle brought a lot. And it is good. I feel as an artist, I don't want to be in a vacuum. At least have like reference to other cinemas will help me.
I know you studied film in Australia after you graduated from American University in Cairo, but what about as a girl? I mean, I was reading about you seeing like Disney films and things of that. Where did you see them? There are no cinemas in Saudi Arabia.
No, but there are video rentals. And
you saw a lot of Jackie Chan. How did you see Jackie Chan?
Wow, and Bruce Lee. It's like they're very big. They were very big when I was growing up. And there's lots of video rentals. And my father, because we're 12 kids and I grew in a small town and there's nothing to do, he wouldn't just like to drink a cup of coffee and maybe read the newspaper. So he will have a lot of, we watch a lot of films when we were kids. And just seeing that cinema, I know it's maybe not very intellectual or anything. It's such a, it opened the door to the world to us, because you know how small towns are, and let alone a small town in Saudi Arabia.
This is near Riyadh, though, the town you grew up in? How far from Riyadh were you?
It's 4 hours from Riyadh, And I'm originally from a town called Zilfi, which is really a governorate of Riyadh, but we moved to the east, and I grew up in a city called Al-Hasa. And it is very small, and people there are very kind, but it is really quiet, you know how. I saw life unfolding through cinemas, and I fell in love with the medium.
Well, talk, if you would, a little bit more about some of the challenges you faced in making the film. I mean, what's it like for girls seeing Western films where women have a lot more rights and certainly maybe even unimaginable rights from the standpoint of a girl growing up in Saudi Arabia?
There are lots of challenges. Financing was really difficult. And then after financing, of course, shooting in Saudi. And we got permission to shoot in Saudi because I wrote the script and it's like in a way that it's like will pass. But dealing with the culture itself is not easy because it's very conservative. They don't like films. They don't understand the film. And whenever we go sometimes in neighborhoods, people don't want cameras in their neighborhoods. So they will like chase us out, and we would film half of the scene there. So we have to go back. We'll have to wait and wait until they are in their houses and go and film very quickly and leave. And access to locations are also difficult. Sometimes people, when we contract a location and we were about to go there, they will tell us last minute, we don't. Well, they just like nervous and they say, we don't want you to film here, go somewhere else and stuff like that. And it was, and we weren't progressing. We are a small film, we're not big budget, and it is very difficult for us to lose a half day every other 2 days we lose a half day. And by mid-shoot, they asked me to cut scenes from the script, and was such an overwhelming, like kind of like scary
painful
moment. Very painful. But we managed. We filmed.
Did the prince see the film? Did you get response?
Oh, yeah.
What did he say?
Oh, he's very proud. He's very proud the film is doing really, really well internationally. And honestly, Saudi Arabia is changing a lot, and there is support for the film back home. And I think a lot of women need just like it is, but it is a conservative culture, and you need to work within the frame of the culture and make the boundaries wider. I feel if I were a little bit more radical or more like aggressive in the way I put my film, I wouldn't have the same support. And I don't think it is the right approach in a place like Saudi. And I think it's very important to give people the chance to accept change on their own pace.
Well, we were talking about the censors before, and it struck me that some of the touches in the film might have just gone right past the censors in terms of, I mean, you could take some of the things like love songs being forbidden or Wajid taking a card to a young guy from a young girl that they're having a romance with, and all this emphasis on sin and so forth, and don't touch the Quran, you might have your period. These could be taken as criticism of the culture, but at the same time, since they're so commonly everyday kinds of things within the culture, they might not be seen as criticism.
Yeah, maybe. And for me, I just like to bring life and have people find things for themselves. And I think Saudi has also very, like, a lot of people don't know that we have TV. TV is very big in Saudi, and we have one of the very famous TV shows called Tash Matash, and it is like a political satire.
So is that where your main actress is?
Yeah, Reem Abdallah.
Mother?
Yeah, she started there, and it is the most famous TV show in Saudi, and even in the Arab world. And people challenge a lot of the social norms, and they bring, so there is, Saudi is not totally like quiet. It seems different from the inside than the outside, and it's changing, so that is good.
There's also a little touch in there about sending money to Palestine. I won't go into detail, but you know, it's part of the script and so forth, which I guess is very common to have Saudi children not only learn their Quran but also support Palestine.
Yeah, I think it is a big cause of, and it's a dear cause for a lot of people back home.
And at this point, the film has had international distribution, so you're getting raves all over the world. What about throughout the Arab world? It's being seen throughout the Arab world as well?
Yeah, it will be. We will have Britannia Studios, so we will be there, and we will go on cinemas, and we will go in theaters, hopefully, next month. We're waiting for the American release.
People are going to think that with that April decision to allow girls to ride bicycles, it would prompted by your film. They're going to get the two conflated in their minds. But it was just coincidental, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it is like, I think film is like, my film was like a lot in the news and was like a lot of people talking about it. And I think it creates, maybe film does not like directly cause change, but creates the right atmosphere for change to happen. And that is what film should do, and art in general, is just like create that tolerance atmosphere where people talk and debate and exchange ideas and not take things for granted.
Are there a lot of girls like, you mentioned your niece, there are a lot of girls like Wajid who are, you know, listening to pop music as the actress who plays Wajid was with Justin Bieber and making bracelets and doing all these things, which are a bit verboten still.
Yeah, no, a lot of girls now with the internet, they're always online and just like downloading stuff and having, it's such a young country, Saudi Arabia. Half of the population is under the age of 25 and they're all online because it creates this virtual reality where it is not segregated and they can talk and they can get to know each other and there's lots of freedoms and social media is really huge.
But it's still polygamous, and you still have young girls. At one point in the film, young girls, Wajid's age, is married, we find out.
Oh, yeah. It still happens. It happens, and it is really sad. And there's lots of non-governmental organizations that are trying to stop it and put, like, a limit on the age when women can get married off. But still, it's part of the culture, and it's a sad part of the culture that we hope it changes. And, yeah.
We're talking with Saudi Arabia's first female director, Hafa Al Mansour, and we're talking about Saudi Arabia, about her film, about filmmaking, and we want to hear from you if you'd like to join this conversation. By the way, Wajid opens September 20th in San Francisco and September 27th at other Bay Area locations, and we welcome your involvement in this conversation. Please feel free to join us. Our toll-free number is available. If you have questions or comments, you can join us now. It's 866-733-6786. Again, we welcome your involvement. 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Again, you're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking with Saudi Arabia's first female director, Haifa Al-Mansour, and her film is called Wajab. It opens September 20th in San Francisco at the International Film Festival. It was at the Tribeca Film Festival and the Dubai International Film Festival. It's been honored at the Venice Film Festival, and it's also opening throughout the Bay Area on September 27th. Saudi Arabia has no public cinemas, and yet it's going to compete in the Oscars next year with this film. And the country will enter Wajah, first full-length feature film shot entirely in Saudi Arabia. And even more extraordinary in a country where women aren't allowed to drive and lack other basic rights. We would like to hear from you if you'd like to join our conversation. And our toll-free number is 866-733-6786 or email us forum at kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. Just talking about something off air about the whole mentioning of Palestine and money going to Palestine. Now, if you had said in this film, if you had put a dialogue in one of your characters' mouths to say, we should care about Saudi Arabia, that's our country, not necessarily the Palestinians, that would have been censored.
I don't know. I tried not to make, to be like political and put things like in a more of like in a humor so people can laugh at it and maybe swallow it a little bit. It just passes. And yeah, I think humor gave me also more chance to say a lot of things.
Well, the film does have humor. Here's David, who writes, how does any educated Saudi justify raising a daughter in a culture that has so little respect for women's rights? Educated Saudi should be ashamed and work tirelessly to change the culture.
I think a lot of educated Saudis, especially educated Saudis in the West, they're coming back home with a lot of ideas and they're progressive. But Saudi is very tribal and very, there is social pressure on people to confirm. It's changing a lot and a lot of people are moving away from those ideas. It's a gradual change and very slow, but it is in the right direction. There are, like next year, women will start voting and there were two women in the Olympics last year. And earlier this year, there were 30 women appointed for the Shura Council. Still, these are very, very small changes. But in comparison to other places in the Arab world, like Egypt or Tunisia, where things were very good, like at least better for women, their liberties are going back. And in places like Saudi is going forward. And I feel we should encourage that more. And I think a lot of Saudis are encouraging that.
Well, you even touch on tribalism a bit in the movie with the uncle running for a political office, and he's from a different tribe. And so, well, let me bring some callers into this. And our first caller is Tasneem. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Fav. First of all, I'd really like to thank you for giving voice to a whole generation of girls and women who have been mute and who have not been able to sufficiently express how trapped some of us feel. And I think this whole analogy of using a bicycle is very much similar to what I felt for the longest time before I actually moved out of Saudi Arabia when I was 18. I left because I felt tired of being helpless and frustrated, specifically because if something had happened to my father, there was no way that I or any of my sisters would have been able to drive him to the hospital. We would have had to rely on the good graces of either neighbors or cousins who lived farther away, or it would have been a taxi. And either way, those all would have taken a lot more time than actually having to transport immediate family members. So for a generation who has lost their voice and who cannot have expressed their feelings of being entrapped, I think I really want to congratulate you for that. My question is about belief in Saudi Arabia. How did you work around that? I know we talked a little bit about working through a van, but how were you able to circumvent those, I guess, laws or those unannounced raids? I know Tash Matash did a great spiel, a whole episode on how illogical the mutawas can be. So how did you kind of work around it? And if you did, do you have any tips for anybody else who might want to start filming and have another movie made in Saudi Arabia?
Oh, thank you so much, Tasneem. You should go back to Saudi. There is a little bit of change now. If you go to Faisaliyah Mall, you'll see kids are having more fun. It's not like
actually,
before.
Actually, the last time I was there, I was actually taking pictures to document different public structures in Jeddah, and my camera was taken away from some of these religious police. So I love Saudi Arabia, and my heart bleeds every time I think about it. But unfortunately, I don't want to go back to a place where I will not be able to drive. And I think I can inspire my sisters and a lot more people by being outside than being inside Saudi Arabia.
All right. Let's go to your question, how I filmed. I think I filmed because I was trying to work within the system. I went to the studied exactly what is happening, how they people film in Saudi, and we have TV, and Riyadh is one of the places there is a little bit of infrastructure for TV. So I went and hired a line producer who's done TV. I gave him the script, and he went to the Ministry of Culture and to the desk where they submitted TV script, and we got the permission, and then we started just like working with exactly like the locals do. And for me, just to work as they work and make the system work for me and make the system a little bit bigger, more wide, like the margin, make the margin bigger every day. I know it's harder to work, and it is very frustrating when you write and you don't know what to say or what to say and how to write a humor and how to maintain a voice, your voice in, within a very small space. But I feel it's way more rewarding to be able to make Saudi, for example, have the first entry in history for the Oscars. It took a lot of work for me, and it was very stressful filming in Riyadh. I lost a lot of weight. That is the only thing good happened. But it is important to work there in the culture and make it better. And it is home, and it's very important to be. To contribute.
And we thank you, Tasneem. Thank you for the call. You married an American diplomat.
Yeah.
How's that received in Saudi Arabia?
My family was happy with it, but like a lot of people, because it's tribal, and my extended family, of course, they didn't like it because I'm supposed to marry my cousin. That is the best case scenario. But yeah, he was working in Saudi at the time, and they showed my documentary at the consulate, and we fell in love. And he's an amazing guy. And I fell in love with America through him. So he's a great diplomat. He's a great diplomat for America.
I was also struck by so many things in the movie, but just the hypocrisy of, and this is something perhaps that the censors missed too, of everything being identified with sin, you know, even singing love songs or listening to pop music, any of those kinds of things, particularly by the principal, who's very austere and I think sincere in wanting the best for these children and wanting them to understand how important it is to give their faith their primary obeisance to their faith. And yet at the same time, the kids discover that she has a lover, that they say, well, it's either a lover or a thief. Somebody's going to her place and so forth. Just the kind of hypocrisy that comes out of all that repression. I think you were aiming at that, weren't you?
Of course. When you live in a place like this where you are expected to keep like this kind of ultimate virtuous and Puritan kind of image, and you have to keep the image and do other things in private life. And that is how humans are. So, yeah, hypocrisy is big. And especially there is in Saudi, there is like a huge distinction between what is public and private. People in private can watch films and dance and listen to music. But once they are outside, they're different. So they somehow that justifies to them that they can have this kind of dual identity.
Well, there are legion number of stories about some of the sheikhs and some of the most powerful figures in the royal family and in the House of Saud, carrying on like billionaire playboys carry on, but to excess.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm not very not very rich. I haven't been very rich. I don't know about
that. You don't keep that company. I understand. The stories are all out there, though. Let me go to some more callers. And by the way, feel free to call us, especially if we'd like to hear from anyone, including anyone from Saudi Arabia or with family there. Again, our number 866-733-6786. We have a caller now from Saratoga. Reshma, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. And I don't know if you remember, I'm the same caller that you introduced yesterday for the names, and you reminded me of Saudi Arabia. And thanks to you, I'm hearing the program today.
I do remember. Yeah, glad to have you back. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I wanted to just welcome Haifa. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
And Mabruk, Alf Mabruk, for the nomination for the entry in the Oscars. I'm really happy for you.
Shukran, Hariti. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm actually from Riyadh. I grew up there. it, the whole storyline that you have is just like my own childhood in Riyadh. I did my first job working at a local store, making little boxes on display and earning 10 riyals per box to save money to buy my first bike when I was 15.
Wow.
Then I went on to teach in a school and bought my first rollerblades. But I, thanks to my father, I lived in a compound and learned everything. So your film is really, it touches very, very close to heart. And so many other things. My family ran the first or the only Bollywood theater in Riyadh. We had a house in a compound, and we used to get films and kind of have every Thursday night viewing with family. So I just heard you mention about the hypocrisy. It indeed is still there, where everything else is happening inside the homes, and outside it's a different face everyone puts up. So it's really incredible how we as expatriates grew up with so much knowledge and education within that whole restrictive atmosphere. I really felt for my Saudi, you know, sisters there who weren't able to go out, while I could go out back to India every year for 2 months and be exposed to everything and then come back to Saudi Arabia. So I think those kind of independent exposures helped us grow better and appreciate everything, but also feel for the women there who are not able to drive or not able to have the freedom. But I was actually wondering, my question was that, are you planning on making any other films about the expatriates in Saudi Arabia? I believe you'll be an excellent person to show that perspective of contribution of expatriates in bringing Saudi Arabia to where it is right now, with all the advancements and development that happened.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would love to do that. And now I'm married to American. I haven't been to a compound until I married Brad, like in 2007. So I know that you have a lot of good liberties that I didn't enjoy as a kid. That they have expats. They have a different kind of world in Saudi, which is a world inside a world. I never had access to it before I got married. So the first time I got exposed to that wonderful world is 2007, huh? Let me tell you.
Somehow those Americans find bourbon and whiskey and all kinds of things that are not allowed in Saudi Arabia.
I just sent some gifts to my nieces, and they wanted to get One Direction products. Justin Bieber is no longer there. It's One Direction. So yeah. They're exposed to every single thing, and it's just interesting how it's this young generation, and it seems like it's a bubble waiting to burst where, you know, everybody will come out and say, you know, forget about this whole hypocrisy and give freedom to vote.
Yeah, but about working on something. Yeah, I'm working with the Jacques Matans, Andrea, and the executive producers of Mad Men on developing a story called a mini series for Fox TV called The Enclave, and it's about an American family that goes to Saudi and start to work finding, like, it's about their world in Saudi Arabia. And hopefully we get it out when financing, and very excited to be working with them.
That is exciting. You may have to film in Dubai or some other place, though.
We'll see. But it is, yeah, I'm very honored to be working with them, with the Jacques Matans. They're amazing writers.
And Reshma, thank you for the call. You're doing co-writing with them?
Yeah, I'm doing consultants and producing for them, and I'll direct the pilot if it takes off.
I have to tell you, one of the scenes I loved in your film is when it's clear that she's enchanted by the idea of having a bike, and she wants a bike and everything. And then suddenly there's a bike that just kind of floats by. It's almost as if it's in the air, and she sees it. And we see it, of course, as viewers. And it's on a truck, you know. But what we see is, from her perspective, is just the bike sort of in the air, and you don't see the truck until actually it comes out.
I wrote that like I was only fantasizing when I wrote that, and I wasn't sure that we would be able to execute it. And we were location scouting in Saudi Riyadh, and there are so many abandoned walls in Riyadh, and it was amazing. So we found the wall, but I wasn't sure there would be like a truck and the right size and the bike and everything. And then the crew tried it, and we tried it at night, and I was really tired, so I went to bed, and they tried it on their own. And I woke up in the morning, they were so excited, and told me, it will work! So I could not believe it when I saw it. It was it is amazing to see the book come to life.
Well, and it works splendidly. It's also, you know, you see, we started out talking with you about her spunkiness and her moxie and all that. She tells the guy who's selling that bike, don't sell my bike, and actually tries to talk him down, you know, in terms of getting instead of paying 80, I got 62. And
she bribes him with mixtapes.
with the tapes as well. Some wonderful touches like that. Here's a listener who writes, the way women are treated in Saudi Arabia is demeaning to all women because they are seen as subhuman sexual objects. It also brings shame on the whole Arabic community because most Americans and others use it to stereotype all other countries of the Middle East where women are treated with dignity and have more equal rights as men.
Well, yeah, the way women are treated in the Middle East and the Arab world in particular is not perfect. And yeah, we should make films like this to inspire young girls to refuse that way. And we should speak about ourselves, and we shouldn't accept it. And I think it is, but I think it is like a very traditional society. These societies are very traditional. They don't accept a change all of a sudden. And it is if you fight with them and if you're aggressive, people will just shun and will never hear from you.
Did you read the story that came out over the weekend about this 8-year-old Yemeni girl?
Yeah, who got married off. I don't know.
Married off and actually hurt, injured as a result. I mean, 8 years old. You know,
it's really sad, a child being
raped, in effect, even though there are marital vows. It amounts to a...
I know, it's really sad.
Let me bring another caller on here. We go to Berkeley. Dan, you're on. Hi.
Yes, good morning. I give the young director, Ms. Al-Mansour, a great deal of credit for making a film about prejudice against half the Saudi population, women. But Ms. Al-Mansour said that she wasn't trying to be political. And yet, she interjects an ancillary commentary about the girls giving money to the Palestinians. That's not political. The Palestinians elected a regime, Hamas, democratically, that calls for genocide not just against Israeli Jews, but all Jews. So why this interjection of something which is not discussed in any greater measure by the film?
It's just depicting life, and I was just depicting life, and it is a joke. It is funny. That is, you write jokes sometimes, and I wasn't trying to be political. I was trying more to observe life and just document it.
In fact, that's what happens, is money is, I mean, you're trying to get at the everyday here, I think, aren't
you? Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and show kind of ordinary life under Saudi rule.
That's right, yes. I was trying just to bring how it feels to be a kid in Saudi and what things like you will encounter and what are the thoughts around you and all that.
She is kind of irreligious, Wajda. I mean, she doesn't really, like I say, act dutifully towards school until she realizes there may be some money involved in the learning how to sing these Quranic verses. But at the same time, she says God willing all the time. I guess that's just kind of traditional and characteristic of the way kids talk.
Yeah, of course. No, it is. I wasn't trying to make her secular or anything. She's just part of the society, but she's a girl who wants to think for she wants to be treated with dignity, with equality, and she just wants to raise a boy and win. And that is like I felt a universal desire just to be heard and assert yourself in the world. And yeah,
this is also really a kind of love story between a mother and a daughter, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, of course. It is. Yeah, I feel like the solidarity between women, especially at home, it's what makes them and keeps them going. And just like this tender moment between the mother and the daughter, it's just like sometimes this is all what they have, each other.
And the poor mother, I mean, trying to get this guy, this husband, who comes across as, you know, an okay guy. He obviously loves his child, his daughter. She's cooking for him and buying a red dress for him and doing everything she can, but she can't give him a son. And there is the heart of a kind of male hegemony of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, it is like having a son is very big in Saudi Arabia, like it is the rest of the Middle East. And it will take generations maybe to change how that, like, women are as valuable and women are... They can not carry only the name and just carry it with a lot of honor.
In fact, honor is also a theme in your film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not only, you know, keeping one's family honor, but keeping one's honor as a woman, really. And the presuppositions about what that means to have honor as a woman.
Oh, yeah, of course. I don't know. This is like... I don't know what you're referring to now. It's like honor, like just to work hard and all that, or just like the scene on the bicycle on the roof.
Well, both. Both. I don't, like I say, we don't want to give away too much of the film here. In fact,
no, but like a lot of people in the Middle East think like bicycle is dangerous physically for women and their virtue and their virtue. And I was amazed, like a lot of women came to me after the film from Egypt and like Lebanon and all over the Arab world, telling me they never rode a bicycle until they're 30 after they got married and stuff like that because it was dangerous. That is how they, so it's not only in Saudi, it's all over. Like,
They would literally lose their virginity if they rode a bicycle.
This is what they think.
This is the notion, yeah.
This is what they think. And I think it is kind of like archaic, a lot of people moving, like becoming more educated. But still, it's a very traditional society, and there is a lot of like emphasis on women's honor in that way.
And again, if you've just joined us, our guest is the first female filmmaker out of Saudi Arabia, Haifa Al-Mansour, and her film is called Wajda. Where's the name come from, Wajda?
It's very difficult for Saudis to pronounce as well. So don't worry if you are finding it difficult to pronounce. But yeah, it comes from Wajd. And Wajd is the word for, it's uncommon word for love. What we use in the Arab world is more hub or ishq. So, and I wanted a poetic name, but I wanted a name that is also not common to create this character that is not very, is different.
And Wajda, that different sounding name, the film that is, opens the September 20th in San Francisco at Opera Plaza Theater and on the 27th of September in other Bay Area locations. You can check local listings for theaters and showtimes. And again, you're listening to Forum. This is a live broadcast. We're talking to Haifa Al-Mansour, Saudi Arabia's first female film director. And this is a fundraising period for this radio station. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller, and that's Neil. Good morning.
Yes, I just want to know what movies, especially American movies, influenced you the most. Can you say?
American movies that influenced me in
right.
this film? I went to Sundance Writers Lab, and that was very American structure there. They taught me exactly the inciting incident and the three-act structure. And but for American movies, I made more, it's mixed between Italian neorealism and Iranian films. But in the way the story is told is like more of like the typical story structure, and I got it a lot from, I wouldn't say like very high cinema from a lot of the films that I was exposed to. The storytelling is so uplifting and so emotional. So I wanted to make something like this. But if you ask me what are the filmmakers that I love, I love the Coen brothers and I love Fargo and all that. And I think the way they brought in the dialogue is amazing. It's very profound, very simple, and yet like it's, yeah, ironic and stuff. It's really cool. So,
well, Dan reminds me that Wajda likes The Matrix.
Yes. She likes The Matrix. That is a reference to pop culture because kids always like it there in Saudi. They watch TV all the time.
And thank you, Neil. I want to get another caller on, and that's Lena. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a practical question for Haifa. How are you supposed to cycle in Saudi Arabia wearing abaya, not to mention the heat factor?
Yeah, I know. Saudi Arabia is a very hot place, but yeah, I don't know how. This is one of the regulations of like now when you cycle in Saudi Arabia, you have to wear the abaya. And I think for Wa'ad, when we were filming, we tried to have the abaya under the seat, tucked under the seat, so it does not get into the wheels. So there is a way.
There is a way. Well, I'd be interested in trying it on. I still have my abaya from the time I used to live there. And I was always very, very perturbed going up the escalators in the malls, watching these women with their really long abayas, including myself, and fearing having them getting stuck in the stairs as we went up and down. So I'm really curious to see how people will manage with their abayas on. But thank you very much, and I hope this is a success. It's certainly a beginning.
Well, thank you for
so
the
much,
call.
Nina.
Here's a listener, Tony, who writes, I saw Wajda last Sunday and thought it was an amazing film. One of the most important things we can learn from this film is how the oppressive behavior depicted in the film can provide insight into similar oppression in our own culture. The restrictions imposed on women in Saudi Arabia differ only in severity from those imposed on women in the West. Western women are still expected to live up to traditional expectations in many ways, to remain chaste and pure, and to hide aspects of their identity from public view and to remain subservient to men. What does your guest think we can learn from her film about how women are treated in Western culture? Women are to remain chaste and pure. Do you think American women and women in the West can learn from your film?
I don't know. I thought I wanted to make a film about, like, it's not how hard it is. It is how we can make things different and how we survive it and how we can always be happy if we really believed in ourselves and worked hard. And I thought maybe this is a message will... It fits everywhere. Yeah, and I think it maybe not a bicycle, not in Saudi Arabia. Sometimes women are encountered, are men, with things that they think it's impossible to get because that is what they are told. And I think we should never listen to that. And we should always believe in ourselves. And we have a dream, even if it is really... A girl from a small town in Saudi Arabia were able to make a film and here with Michael on forum. So, yeah, there is always a way.
Another listener writes, well, we have a little, just a couple of minutes left with you. When traveling in southern Africa, I came across several British women and families who have been living and working as teachers in Saudi for many years. I was very taken aback about how apologetic they all were about Saudi policies about women, especially women themselves. I'm hugely hopeful that this film and other modern-day technology, coupled with increased worldwide pressure and, importantly, political pressure, will change Saudi policy at an increased pace.
Yeah, I hope women just work hard. And there is a lot of, like, I think women just, like, shouldn't underestimate that they should train themselves and should be ready and you should always be willing to challenge and just be, yeah, believe in yourself.
Well, let me just ask you a hypothetical question here before we conclude. Let's say you win an Oscar. You want to say things like you just said? What would you say in front of millions of people about... Would you want to have some kind of message like that?
I don't know. I think I'll be crying. I don't think I will be able to say anything.
It would render you speechless.
Yes, most probably.
Well, you might be surprised. I wish you good luck with this film. I congratulate you on it. And it's been a pleasure to have you here. We thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Michael. I really enjoyed the interview.
And again, Wajda is opening on September 20th at Opera Plaza, and you can see it here in the Bay Area on the 27th of September. It'll be opening throughout. Just check listings. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Also, our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and we get online support from David Marks and Chad McClymans. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, we thank you for being a part of this morning's program. If all goes according to plan, we will be with you on the morrow. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.